Hey, everybody. Before we get into the show, I wanted to let you know we've got another live show coming up. We will be back at Maya Cinemas on Thursday, May 23rd for Furiosa, the latest in the Mad Max series. We are so excited for this one. Joining me to talk about it, we've got Sam Novak, Shahab Zargari, and Tony Gonzalez. A great lineup. It's going to be an awesome movie. We are so excited to talk about it. So make sure to check the show notes. There are opportunities to win tickets. You can also buy tickets, and we hope to see you there Thursday, May 23rd, 6 p.m. at Maya Cinemas for Furiosa. Everybody, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together. I'm your host, David Rosen. We have got a big movie today. We have got a Steven Spielberg big movie today. But before we get into it, I just wanted to, do the usual beginning of the show spiel. Make sure you are subscribed. Make sure you are rating and reviewing the show. Make sure you are sharing the show. Make sure you're sending us some feedback. You can email me at bydavidrosen@gmail.com or just leave a review right there on iTunes or wherever. But we want to hear what you are thinking of the show. We want to know if you're liking the format, you're liking the flow of it, you're liking our opinions that we're putting forth on the show, you know? We just want to keep making it better, and we really appreciate any feedback you can give us. So with that said, let's jump into it. After what seems like an eternity, finally, it is the return of Steven Spielberg, the blockbuster filmmaker. Based on the beloved book by Ernest Cline, Ready Player One takes place in a dystopian future where the only thing left to do with your time is plug into a virtual reality game world called The Oasis, in which you can be and do anything you can imagine. Before passing away, creator James Halliday issued a particular challenge that if someone would complete, would grant them control of the entire Oasis. Our hero, Wade Watts, played by Ty Sheridan, sets out to complete this challenge with the help of his friends in both the virtual and real worlds. It's a fast-paced, exciting throwback to the adventure movies of the 80s, which is fitting considering it's the era that James Halliday most loved. The movie feels like a theme park ride featuring hundreds of cameos from pop culture characters dating all the way back to the days of the Atari 2600. It's a fun ride that displays its inspirations right on its sleeve. And while it's been getting really mixed reviews out there, it has been a big hit, which was a little bit surprising. Not everyone thought it would be, but it is doing really great out there. And I, for one, really enjoyed this movie. But you'll hear more about it in this conversation. All right, so we are here doing another episode of Piecing It Together. Today we're talking about Ready Player One, the new Steven Spielberg movie, and with me is my buddy Will. How you doing, Will?
We live, baby.
We live.
I'm good. Hello, everybody. I'm pretty good. I'm next to nobody, but you know, you're gonna learn about me today, I suppose.
That's right. And I'm hoping to actually have you back for the Rampage episode.
Oh, yeah, I'm hoping to be back for that.
Yeah,
Rampage is near and dear to my heart.
So I thought this would be the perfect one to have you on for the first time because being a big video game and pop culture type
movie,
just seemed like the perfect fit
for it. It ain't gang related, it's game related. You know what I'm saying? So I'm with that. No way.
Oh, man. So this is going to be an interesting one to talk about because the theme of the show is talking about the inspirations of movies. And this is a movie that is practically nothing but inspirations. It's just beginning to end. And it's based on the book by Ernest Cline. And Steven Spielberg really took the opportunity to throw everything at the screen.
You really couldn't have asked for someone to take the helm any better than Steven Spielberg. I mean, he practically is behind most of the inspirations that inspired the movie and
right?
the book that inspired the movie.
Right? So, absolutely. I mean, you know, this guy was watching Spielberg movies while he was writing it.
Oh, yeah, you know. I mean, like, it's like the big four. You know, you got Spielberg, Zemeckis, Lucas, and Hughes, right? Did I get that right?
Yeah, hell yeah. Those
right, are to four. Me, that's the big four of, yeah. of 80s, early 90s cinema, as yeah. far as, you know, Brat Pack, whatnot. As far as movies that we as teenagers grew up watching, you know, that really impacted us, you know, your Breakfast Clubs, your Pretty in Pink, your Raiders of the Lost Arks, you know, your Back to the Futures, you know, that, you know, it's your, or I guess we could throw on Cameron, too, for the Terminators, whatnot.
Sure.
Big five, then. We got a big five.
Yep.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, all of those things inspired Klein, and to have one of the big five actually reach back and do this movie that was pretty much inspired by the big five. I'm coining that, by the way, the big five. It's pretty. I mean, if you just try to wrap your head around that for a second, that's pretty huge. And I always was like, how are we going to get all these licensees to play nice on the screen together? You know, because people are pretty touchy about how their licenses are treated and who sure. they're handing them out to and stuff. But I guess if Spielberg shows right. up asking really nicely to use your license in a movie, you kind of don't say no to that.
Right, right.
So, you know, kudos to them managing to wrangle Spielberg to do this, because I really can't imagine too many other directors really be able to pull this thing off the way he did.
Yeah, Spielberg wants to do it. He gets to do it. I mean, there was another...
And he gets to do it his way.
Yeah, there was another review I was reading, or maybe I was listening to, I forget, but they were talking about how, like, the whole Shining scene with all the blood, getting that into a PG movie.
Oh, yeah.
You know, all that blood.
Oh, man, the elevators.
Yeah.
Man,
Spielberg, you want to do it? Sure.
You know,
sure,
why the not? Best part was in the theater. For the record, I never read the book. Just
I was gonna ask you that. Yeah, no, I never did either.
No, I didn't read the book. And when I found out about the movie and how Spielberg was taking liberties with it, I really didn't want to read the book then. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to wait and see. But just, I mean, as soon as you saw the little girls, it's just, I mean, the elevators, people in the theater was already clapping. Like, yeah. they already knew what knew. Time it was. H didn't know, but everybody else did.
So we will we'll definitely be circling back around to all that, but let's jump into this show here. Let's start talking about what movies inspired Ready Player One. And I will go first with the first puzzle piece that I have listed here, which is actually Willy Wonka or Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Ooh, wow,
which
really?
To me, James Halliday is that eccentric creator who built a fantasy world to bring people into, and they're all his guests in this fantasy world. And I can't really think of another movie that is so you know, so clear that is kind of the intention to have this eccentric billionaire type guy bringing someone into his world. They actually have an opportunity to inherit this world from him. I think there's definitely a lot of Willy Wonka
definitely
in this.
Shit of Willy Wonka. And you know what? What's the name of the actor there, Holiday? Do you know his name offhand?
Man, yeah.
That guy, I could see him actually taking over for Gene Wilder and Willy Wonka. I could see that guy being
sure.
Willy Wonka. He could pull it off. I think I'd rather watch him as Willy Wonka than Johnny Depp, to be honest. Like, he just had that quirkiness about him, now that you mentioned it. The first thing I thought about was him standing next to some Oompa Loompas or something, and he could definitely pull that off. I could see that working really well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, man. And he sure was weird, you know?
Oh, yeah, he was quirky as heck.
Yeah.
Can I cuss?
Oh, yeah, sure.
He was quirky as shit. Man, that dude was quirky. But you know, it worked for him. It worked for the character. You know, he was like this introverted, just super socially awkward. You know, he spoke through his creation kind of thing. You know, he was, you know, quiet on the outside but loud on the inside. You know, and it definitely showed with the oasis he created. You know,
yeah. You know, another thing. And this is more about Halliday the character specifically. Before we move on to the next one, but a lot of the negative criticisms I've seen being thrown at this film, and for the most part, I think it's been mostly positive, but a lot of the negative ones like to mention about how, where are the references to pop culture from, like, after the 2000s, because this takes place, like, I don't know, 60 years in the future.
2045,
yeah, like, what were the big characters in 2045? Why aren't people cosplaying as them, or whatever you want to call it, in, you know, the virtual world? But, you know, really, that's already been answered, because everybody's obsessed with this Halliday guy.
And like, these are his favorite characters from his generation. Right, and so and I think being obsessed with the game in the world of this movie is to be obsessed with the stuff that he loved. Exactly. And I think that answers itself right there. And I think it kind of strikes that off the list of bad things about the movie.
You're exactly right with that. That's what I thought.
Yeah. So with that being said, what do you have for next puzzle piece here?
My puzzle piece, or my first puzzle piece that I'm going to contribute, I got to go with Tron.
Okay.
I'm not talking new Tron. I'm talking OG Tron.
Right, right.
I'm talking 80s Tron. I'm talking in the same time frame as all of these pop culture references Tron. Just first of all, getting put into a game like that where, you know, you're running around as your avatar, like the face scan. Whatnot, that reminded me of the scene where, you know, Bridges got digitized, you know, got broken down and sucked into the game by the MCP or whatnot. And it was like the scene when you see all, when you finally see all the members of the High Five, you know, H. Saito, the other guy, and who am I missing? H. Saito. Oh, Artemis.
Artemis, yeah.
Right. So you get the High Five, but then when you see them in real life, you know, that really took me back to how when you would see Bruce Boxleitner and what's his name? The guy that played Sark, like when you'd see their real life characters, and then you see the contrast with their avatars in Tron. You know, and he's like when you see Boxleitner, then you see Tron. It's like, oh, he looks like just like Bruce Boxleitner. You know, it's just, you know, those kind of things. It when I saw all of them together versus when you see them in the game world, it just gave me a Tron feel. Like when you see them all in real life, and then you see them all in avatar form. It just really took me back to that place.
Sure, you know, it's funny too because this isn't really a criticism necessarily, but it's funny because it's about Tron, but it's also about Ready Player One and a lot of other movies that are within the same realm. Is there's a lot of like neon lights, and that's not really a video game thing. I mean, it kind of is with some like old school stuff, but like. I kind of wish it was. Like, it's such a cool look, you know?
Yeah, that I think that was almost like a direct riff on Tron.
Yeah,
the influence that Tron had on it, just the whole neon bright lights. Although, I guess if you want to compare it to something, you could video game and you could maybe do, maybe Vector graphics.
Right,
like
Vectrex, was that the name of the system?
Right, that was the old version. But, you know, like, there are some arcade games that had Vector graphics, like the Star Wars arcade is probably the most notable.
Yeah.
But, you know, Tempest, Star Castle.
Speaking of Tempest, I think I read that Tempest is one of the games he had to play in the book version.
Probably.
Yeah,
probably.
He had to do some kind of Tempest challenge. Yeah,
my understanding is, the challenges were really rewritten for the movie, and we can go into that a little bit later. But yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if Tempest won the challenges. Not at all. For sure.
Well, you know, along that line, you know, my next puzzle piece, it's actually a pretty terrible movie, but I think, I think it's an interesting one.
Terrible movies?
I know. It's the Gerard Butler film Gamer.
You know, I did watch that.
Remember that?
I'll own that. I did watch
it. Yeah. I mean, obviously this is 1,000 times better, but you know, people just controlling avatars in a video game, world where, you know, it's kind of post-apocalyptic, like, you know, it's the real world has gotten, you know, bad and everything like that. You know, I think there's definitely shades of that. I think that movie, whether it inspired the book or not, I think it is kind of a stepping stone from things like Tron to where we are now.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Tron was more or less a fantasy at the time. The internet didn't even exist when Tron came out.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So now with Gamer, at that point, you know, people did have in-game avatars and gamer tags, and you know, professional esports were already well kicked off. So you can definitely see the influence of its time versus, you know, Tron in its time.
Oh yeah, and the challenges are an extension of esports. So yeah, that kind of does go hand in hand with that.
What do you mean the challenges in
In the game, in the movie. No. Well, maybe not all of them. Yeah, I was thinking more of the race, but
see, now challenges. The actual challenges of the movies are probably more akin to single player games.
Sure.
You know, but the way they went about completing the challenges, like, you know, a race. Okay, that could be esportsy. Not so much though.
Yeah, you're right.
But I think we're gonna hit something else we'll be able to touch more on as far as what the challenges are more akin to, I think.
Plus, I should mention that I don't play online games, so, right, so I'm a total.
So what is he even talking
what
about?
What am I talking about? I don't know anything. That's why I brought Will here.
This guy, forget about it. You know, what's going on around here? What kind of outfit is this?
So, what is your next puzzle piece?
I gotta go with. I'm going with The Last Starfighter.
Okay.
One of my personal faves. You know, I think it was more of a critical reception than a popular, profitable reception, but I love The Last Starfighter. And the way I feel that it kind of is a piece that plugs into player one is just the whole having to literally save the world, so to speak, you know, via a video game. You know, being good at the game is what got him in a position to save indirectly his world, because the danger would eventually got to his planet, but to save the alien guy that came to get him, I forget his name, I'm sorry.
Oh, it's all good.
But yeah, you know, it by saving, helping him save his world, he saved the whole universe, including his world. So
sure.
You know.
Well, I'm going to lose a little bit of my nerd cred here.
Say you've never seen The Last Starfighter. I'm going to get up and leave. What you mean, bro? What you mean? No, don't say that.
Yeah, I never saw The Last Starfighter.
I told you not to say it, man. You know, I got the Blu-ray. I'm going to fix this, folks. If I'd have known that, I'd have brought it with me today. I'm so salty now. I could have brought that. I'd have been nothing to throw in a car.
Yeah, I need to see. You know, there's a chance. There's a lot of, like, classics that
all
I saw back in high school.
You watch that you've never seen the cinema masterpiece that is The Last Starfighter.
I know.
Oh, bruh.
It's crazy. Crazy.
That's beyond crazy. That's unforgivable almost, man. Wow. There's a Blu-ray now.
Oh man, yeah. I'm promising right here on the air I'm going to watch it.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, it's gonna happen.
Yeah, I'm gonna make sure it happens. Don't worry about this. I got this.
Oh man. So my next two I'm actually gonna do together. Because I think they kind of go hand in hand with similar themes. And that would be The Matrix and Avatar, which are very different movies, but they both deal with going into another world. They both deal with, what you were just saying with The Last Starfighter, with, you know, saving your world by saving, you know, the other world as well. You know, taking over another character, basically.
Yeah, they both do involve basically like full immersion, where you're in this kit, you know, whereas The Matrix, you're getting this thing put in your neck, but you're being inserted into the quote unquote game world.
Yeah.
Or the real world.
Right, the real world.
In The Matrix, it's the real
world. Yeah, it's the other way around. Yeah.
With Avatar, you're getting put into basically a clone, so you're coming out of the real world and getting put back into the real world as a whole nother species. So that's kind of meta in itself. That's a whole lot going on right there. That's a lot for me.
Sure, yeah, but yeah, these are both movies though where they're also another thing, not just what's happening, but these are movies that are big, major adventures. And that's one thing. There's not really, because everything is superhero movies lately, there's not really adventure in a lot of these movies. And both of those I would consider adventures. And that's what I definitely would consider Ready Player One to be, especially a classic Spielberg adventure is what it mostly is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What do you have for your next one?
I'm gonna go with the Goonies.
Goonies, all right.
Goonies, that's an all-time classic. I hope you've seen the Goonies.
Oh, yes, I've seen the Goonies.
Okay, just check it, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
It's been a while, but I have seen the Goonies many times, yeah.
Goonies, didn't Spielberg do the Goonies?
I think he produced it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So anyway, the way I feel the Goonies plugs into it is just the whole like with the challenges, the whole clue to the next challenge, the whole key to the next clue to the next key to the next clue. The Goonies was just a big, long, okay, we got this clue. We got to figure out this clue. Okay, we figured out this clue, which presented another clue. So now we got this other clue. So now we got to figure out this clue. Okay, got some bad guys. We got to lose them. Okay, back to this clue. And that's kind of, to me, about the same pacing as Ready Player One. You know, once you got the first clue, you got the first key, and you got another clue, then the pacing of the movie's driven by people racing with, like, you know, because in the Goonies, both the bad guys and the kids were racing to find this treasure.
Sure.
And in Ready Player One, it's the exact same vehicle used to pace it, as far as, you know, bad guys and good guys both wanting the same thing at the end. So they're both trying to figure out how to outwit each other along the way with these basic, with these clues and challenges to get to the ultimate goal. And to me, I feel that's, I mean, it's classic Goonies.
Yeah.
That aspect of it is classic Goonies, if you ask me.
Yeah, I think that's what I like most about the movie too. Like, there's so much made out of the you know, the references to pop culture and all that. There's so much made out of the whole virtual reality world. But when it comes down to it, this is just a classic adventure. And mm-hmm. there's just not that many of them anymore. And for it to not only pull it off well, but to just be super exciting, I kind of think, from beginning to end, you know, which has that classic feel.
Yeah, I really got into it. I need to see it again. I need to see it two or three times just to catch everything. It's a lot to wrap your head around. I mean, I caught a pretty good amount of it, but I'm sure there's a lot of Easter eggs
yeah.
that are just scattered all about that movie that you almost probably got a freeze frame some of it to catch. It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm really looking forward to that. I had like a warm fuzzy the whole time.
I obviously haven't read the book either, but at the end, for some stupid reason running around in my head, I thought it was going to be, especially with Spielberg, I thought like the thing they had to do was going to be the E.T. game where you can't win, you know?
Oh, you know what? Honestly, my gut was like, it's going to be adventure. It had to be because it was the first Easter egg.
Right.
Like, I mean, and for never having read the book, I was kind of proud of myself for knowing that little bit of
that's
thing.
That's awesome, yeah.
What was his name, Robineau or Walter Bobineau, whatever the programmer's name, I mean.
Yeah.
That I definitely knew about that because...
No, that's a good catch for sure, to be able to guess that. Because it is funny because as soon as they said it, I was like, oh my God, yeah. Like, I should have known that,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I knew it straight off. I was like, with all this talk about Easter egg and whatnot, there's only one game it could be. And so I was... It's like it was more of a validation than a surprise for me when it did turn out to be adventure. I was like, yeah, I knew that. You know, I'm helping my girlfriend. I'm like, yeah, see, told you.
Told you. All right. Well, you know what? Again, I'm going to do two more together because, again, they're ones that I think have similar themes. One of them, I'll say this one first, isn't technically a movie, although it was re-released as a movie.
Huh?
It is.
What is this tomfoolery you about to pull out of your hat, man?
Well, technically, there's no rule that says it has to be a movie. So on this show, so okay.
All right.
Okay. But no.
All right, Holiday. No rules, yes.
It is the three-part South Park Imagination Land episode.
Wow.
You ever see that?
I have not.
Yeah. No. They ended up re-releasing it as a DVD that was like a full-length movie where they stitched it together. So really? It was technically like a movie. It's basically the second South Park movie, and what it is just references after references. Like every character from the 80s and 90s were all in it. Yeah,
man, I want to see that.
It's pretty fun. Honestly, like I probably should have refreshed my memory before this show, but I don't even remember what the plot was. I just remember it was just nonstop, like video game and
you
pop
know, it's
culture.
Funny
references.
You say that because everything I've heard about the book is that. It's just a reference nostalgia of smorgasbord buffet.
Yeah.
Like it's like a buffet of like cotton candy. It's like it's sweet and you like it, but it's not very filling or fulfilling and it eventually gives you a toothache. So
yeah.
I think it's fitting that you don't remember the plot of South Park movie because from what I understand, the way the book reads is less about the plot and more about just reference on top of reference. Like,
yeah,
like, don't worry about the plot. Look, we got a Gundam fighting Mechagodzilla over here. You know what I mean? It's like that kind of feel from what I heard. And, well, I don't know. I'm a tangent a little bit. But
that's fine.
But what I understand as far as the book versus the movie, being that Spielberg understands cinema as well as he does, he's fucking Spielberg, right? So he took the, what I understand, he took the book and made the movie. I know he rewrote the challenge and stuff, but he made the crux of the movie based more about Holiday as a person. I heard that the book was really just reference after reference, pop culture after pop culture, is just overkill. Just on top of, it's just brain meltingly. Whereas Spielberg focused the challenges. Sure, I mean, he's brilliant for this. If what I heard about it is true, because he managed to take the, you know, the movie's still totally based about, rooted in 80s and 90s pop culture references and the way the Oasis is presented. But the root of the movie and the clues to solving the challenges was rooted in Holiday's social awkwardness and his inability to tell this woman that he loved her.
Right.
And even to kiss her. And he didn't even like take her dancing. He made her watch The Shining, for Christ's sake. And I mean, just for Spielberg to have the cinema sense to look at the book and say, oh, this is a bunch of vapid stuff. Okay, but I can take this and that, but it's gonna need this, and to add that heart to it, to give it that gravitas, to really just give it, you know, the book didn't have like a soul to it. This movie has a soul to it.
Right.
Because although, okay, yeah, they end up in a Shining movie, okay, and they end up having to play adventure, okay, but it's how they got to figure out that's what they needed to do next. Whereas that part in the book, what I understand, was just some more 80s and 90s pop culture stuff on top of pop culture stuff.
Yeah.
That it took who Holiday was as a person and made you have to learn who he was as a person to figure out like what made him tick, what he felt his greatest failures were, what he had regrets about, what he couldn't do anything about now that he's dead. That's huge, man.
Sure.
Hats off to Spielberg for that, man. That's just, I mean, it from what he had to work with the source material to what he turned in as a motion picture, having, you know, added that component to it that was, I understand, was sorely lacking from the book. Man, that's Spielberg, man. Sure. That's genius.
Yeah, it's good to see him back doing something like this. I mean, you know, next up, I think, is Indiana Jones 5. And
Indiana Jones 5?
Yeah, no, that's happening.
Is Harrison in it?
Yeah, he said straight up, it's the last time I'm doing it. And Spielberg, you know, the last one was so bad, but you know, it did have
the mea culpa.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could pull it off. I think
if anyone can pull off Spielberg,
sure. I mean, yeah, I mean, this proved that he still got it.
Shia LaBeouf was gonna be a bad bet at the time. I mean, there's some things you can't fault the man for. There's some things you just can't see coming sometimes, man.
Oh, man. So the other one I was going to mention along with Imagination Land, it goes right along with everything we were just saying, but Wreck-It Ralph, which is another tons of classic characters, just, you know, squeeze them all in and like, holy shit, look who they included.
Yeah, you're right. As far as video game licenses and spectacle goes, it's hard to top Wreck-It Ralph.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing. Yeah, you're right. It's kind of the same feel with that, all the boss licensees and whatnot. You know what I'm saying? You got Zangief and Mario in the same scene. That's kind of surreal.
Yeah, and also I was going to say, that's my two biggest omissions as far as like pop culture things are concerned. One of them is, I don't think there was any Nintendo. Am I correct? But there was in Wreck-It Ralph. But
what, in Ready Player One?
Yeah. I don't remember seeing any. I mean, there could have been squeezed in, scenes. But
you know what? I have to rewatch it again, but I wouldn't be surprised. Nintendo's pretty tight.
Yeah.
Pretty tight with their properties. I didn't see any magic mushrooms. Didn't see any one-up mushrooms. You know,
right.
You'd think something of some maybe coins.
Yeah.
But that's reaching, you know.
Yeah, like, that's an arcade thing.
That wasn't like a Nintendo. It didn't even make the Nintendo sound. They could at least did that at the Nintendo sound. You get the coins. That would have been great.
Or a warp pipe or something. That would have been cool.
You might be right about that. I have to do some reading or watch it again. I can't recall.
That and my other big omission, and this one's a little bit of a reach because I can't imagine they would have done this in the first place, but when they had to recite a magical line. Now, I don't know some kind of magic spell or whatever. I don't know if the one that they did was some kind of reference to any movie or anything. I'm not sure if I missed that. But I was sitting in my seat just going, please be Klaatu, Veratu, Nikto from Army of Darkness.
I wanted to be Brownar Weak Brom Ninny Bomb from Transformers the movie.
Oh, my God.
That's what I wanted to hear. Y'all know what I'm talking about. There be stupid Junkyard.
And that's why Will is on this show today.
Man, y'all know what's going on. We found Ninny Bomb. Y'all don't know about that.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh,
me,
man.
Grimlock loves cup stories.
Oh, man.
Where are Ninny Bombs at?
Do you have any other puzzle pieces?
Not offhand, no.
All right.
No, but did you pick up on any like references or things in there that they kind of played with that kind of made you go, "Oh, that's cool"? Like for me, one of the ones that got me was I love the Zemeckis cube.
Yes.
Because, you know, it rewound time for 60 seconds. And, of course, Zemeckis made Back to the Future. Yep. And he's riding around in the DeLorean. You know, I just thought that when he did the Zemeckis cube and it started rewound time back, that really, that did something for me.
Yeah.
That worked for me.
I just picture Zemeckis, like, going up to Spielberg just shaking his hand.
That was a nice nod. Buddy. That was a real nice nod, Zemeckis cube. And it was actually Rubik's Cube. So it was like you got a twofer.
Yeah.
And then it rewound time. It was really well thought out. Did you see anything like that made you kind of go like, oh, yeah, that was a nice use of that?
I mean, you know, just off the top of my head, and this one's a pretty obvious one, but for me personally, because you know I love King Kong, by having King Kong during that race.
The real King Kong. Like Peter Jackson's King Kong looked like.
Yeah. That was beautiful.
Same character model, I think. Yeah, I enjoyed that a lot too.
Yeah, that was absolutely beautiful to get. Even if it's just 10 more minutes of King Kong, that makes me happy.
You know what got me geeked was when Saito, I think it was, or the other guy, he turned into that Gundam.
Oh,
I got a warm fuzzy just saying it. That got me so
People were applauding in my theater.
Oh, man, that was so dope to see a Gundam flying around for 2 minutes. It's like, you know, it was funny because I remember early on in the movie when he was like, I got this glove, let you turn to any robot you want for 2 minutes or whatever. So when they were coming into the final showdown and he was just kind of sitting in the van, like meditating or sitting there, whatever, I was already like, oh, he finna use that glove. He only got 2 minutes. But I didn't know what he was going to be, but I was kind of hoping for Optimus Prime. Yeah. I was kind of hoping it was going to be Optimus Prime. Oh, I would have lost my shit. But still, that Gundam, didn't see that one coming. That was dope. I really enjoyed that. That was hot. And then they did the classic Gundam pose where he struck the pose and it had the little light flash on him. I was like, oh, y'all did your homework. Yeah, this is real good. That's I played Gundam Versus, y'all. Check me out. Noximus on PSN, bruh. Holla at me. Put these lasers in your head.
I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Come catch this weaponry.
Oh, man, I'm just gonna mention just two more quick ones here, and these are just strictly visually speaking. The real world reminded me quite a bit of District 9.
Yes.
Yeah, like the stacks and all that.
Like Chappie.
Well, honestly, that same director, like everything he's done, really.
Yeah, I guess Blomkamp, whatever his name is, Neil.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, yeah, the real world reminded me of that. The virtual world reminded me a lot of Valerian from last year. So
that's pretty good. Yeah, I didn't think about that. Yeah, that's pretty good. I mean, as far as spectacle goes.
Right, exactly. Yeah, Valerian with a lot more substance.
Valerian was all spectacle. Yeah. I mean, I was really expecting the heir apparent to, don't tell me, Oh God, now I'm spacing. It's my movie though, with Bruce Willis and the God. Why am I with Chris Tucker and why am I drawing a blank? This is my movie. Okay, tell me the name of the movie.
Fifth Element.
Yes, Fifth Element. Thank you. I was really hoping this was gonna be like a return to form, something like that.
Yeah,
you know.
And I think it was a little unfairly, like, overjudged, Valerian, but it's not great.
You know? Well, I mean, when you're following the Fifth Element and, you know, you're getting all this hype, like, you know, Lucas sitting there talking about how, yeah, special effects have finally caught up so I can really make my vision the way I wanted to make it. And it's like, yes, this is what the Fifth Element was supposed to be, and then it's not. It's not even like the Third Element. It's like, it's like, what is this? You know, it's pretty.
Yeah.
It's very pretty, but
sure is. Mm. So I think that brings us to the finished puzzle. So the list of movies are Tron, The Matrix, Willy Wonka, Gamer, Avatar, The Last Starfighter, Goonies, Wreck-It Ralph, South Park Imagination Land, District 9, and Valerian. I think that covers them all.
I think so.
I didn't leave any out. Yeah, I think that's it.
I did like the Iron Giant nod to T2. When the dude was, first of all,
I'm trying to remember that. First of all,
what's the dude's name that had the skull chest? You remember?
Yeah, I don't remember what the character name is. TJ Miller played him.
Okay, but, well, anyway, yeah. when he was shooting at the Iron Giant's knuckles, it looked like he was using a gun from that Grasshopper game. It was something about the Damned. The gun looked just like the gun he has in that game. But anyway,
shit, I forget.
I beat that game too. I just can't remember the name. The gun talks, by the way. It's a smart ass gun. But you know, I beat the hell out of that game. But when he blew away the Iron Giant and he fell into the fire, he put the thumbs up.
Yeah,
what do you mean?
I forgot
mean?
All about it.
How do you mean you forgot?
No, I forgot about it.
We're finished here. We're done. I'm putting my headphones on. What you mean?
I forgot about that scene.
How?
That was great,
T2
too.
It was like everything. No.
I remembered it during it. I just forgot it right now that it happened during Ready Player One.
Man, are you kidding?
I was so happy when that happened
that
during
didn't
the movie.
Stay with you, man.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Man, stop saying
too,
that.
Too many references all in one. I gotta keep track.
Oh, no, man.
I gotta bring a notebook to the movies next time.
Man, that was everything. That was everything. I was like, oh my God. Like, as soon as I saw it falling back into the fire, I was like, don't do it. Don't do it. And then he did it. I was like, oh yes. Man. Yes, that was worth it.
So with that, we wrap it up by how'd you like the movie? I could tell that you liked it. I liked it as well.
I enjoyed it a lot. Like I said, you know, from what I heard, as far as he made to the changes to the movie versus the book, I probably wouldn't even got through the book, to be honest.
Right.
But the movie, I definitely plan on seeing at least a couple more times, just so I can try to catch everything. It's so dense. It's just so dense, chock full of all of those cross-referencing references. And
did you see it in 3D? I'm not a big 3D guy, but it seems like it would be a fun one.
I think it probably worked pretty well in 3D. I might make an exception and go check it out in 3D.
Yeah.
But I definitely want to sit through it a few more times just to scour the screen for maybe a part of the screen I wasn't looking at because I was focused on the plot or whatever at the time. And there's probably something laying on the ground over here. It's like, oh my God, that's from this one obscure ass movie in the 80s that I seen like one time at my friend's house on the VHS when I had to sleep over, whatever, probably on Betamax. So, yeah, I'm definitely going to go back just to try to catch everything.
I wouldn't doubt that there's stuff in the Earth, like the real life scenes too.
Oh yeah.
You know, just to, you know, throw you off.
I bet. You know, it's something you don't even think about. I got to look for that now too.
Yeah. So yeah, no, I like this movie a lot too. I think, you know, anything that could be nitpicked about it is just nitpicking. I mean, it's just a fun movie.
Also,
you know?
I knew H was a girl way before they revealed it.
Oh, yeah?
I knew. I could tell by the mannerisms.
Yeah.
I could tell by, like, when he at the time was telling, when he got into the Buckaroo Banzai suit, trying to tell him, like, you know, he might be a 300-pound dude named Chuck in the basement or whatever, and then he put the hand on the shoulder. I was like, oh, my God, that's a chick. That, like, she's projecting. That's the chick.
Yeah.
And then I wasn't surprised. I told my girl the whole time. She was like, you're right. I said, I know I'm right. I'm always right. What you mean? Why are you surprised for? You're going to learn today. You learn every day. Why? That's not a surprise either.
Wow. Well, yeah, this was great. You know, Will, thank you for being here. You got anything coming up you're doing? Anything you want to plug or anything like that?
Not really. No, I'm kind of just working and working out, man.
Just working on that.
That's it. All right. You got nothing going on. If you want to know some claims of fame, whatever, you might notice, might care, might not. But I pioneered the Wii memory hack when they had the arbitrary limit of 2 gigs on the Wii. I figured out how to space it out to 4 gigs. I went right viral for that. Just look under Noximus, a Wii workaround. You'll see my little contribution to the gamer geekdom there.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I guess I'm in like Chinese blogs for that one, man. Like, I mean, they're dated like 2006, 2007, but you know, I left my mark. I did my part for the community. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? They'll never forget. Hashtag never forget, man. You know what I'm saying? I did my thing. You know.
Oh.
Some of y'all out there was rocking 4 gig memory cards thanks to me.
I told you you'd be the perfect co-host for this episode.
That's right.
All right. Oh, man. Thanks for being here.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me.
All right. That was a really fun conversation about a really fun movie. Thank you, Will Hines, for joining me on that one. And also, Will actually called me the next day to tell me that we forgot a really important puzzle piece. The movie that we forgot is Scott Pilgrim versus the World. And he's absolutely right that, you know, with all the video game references and, you know, all that pop culture that was in that movie, definitely there is some of that in Ready Player One. And that is a really, really great point that we missed that one, Will. And also, I'm really sorry that I didn't see The Last Starfighter. I'm going to make that happen soon, I promise. So anyway, thank you all for listening. Make sure, if you haven't yet, to subscribe to the show. Leave us a review, rate us, share it with your friends, and send us some feedback. We want to know how you're enjoying the show. I want to know how you liked our conversation. I'm going to be having Will back again soon to discuss the new movie Rampage. And I got a lot of other great episodes coming up, some with some of the people you've heard before on the show. I still have some other friends that I'm hoping to get on the show as co-hosts soon. So, yeah, we got a lot of great content coming soon. And thank you again for listening. We really hope you enjoyed it. And as usual, I'm going to end the show with a piece of my music. And, it's a good one, I think. It's one of my older tracks, even though we're now promoting the new album, A Different Kind of Dream. But I just thought this one would be an appropriate one for this show. Thanks for listening.